Imagine putting on a headset to explore uncolonized prairie as part of a Lakota bison hunt, or pointing your phone at objects to learn their names in your family's language, or even touring modern cities with indigenous virtual tour guides. While the immersive technologies already exist, communities around the world are still working together to solve issues around natural language processing for indigenous languages.
Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and ethics. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Michael Running Wolf, Northern Cheyenne, Lakota, and Blackfeet, who was raised in a rural prairie village in Montana with intermittent water and electricity. Naturally, he has a master's of science in computer science, is a former engineer for Amazon's Alexa, and is an instructor at Northeastern University. He was raised with a grandmother who only spoke his tribal language, Cheyenne, which, like many indigenous languages, is near extinction. By leveraging his advanced degree and professional engineering experience, Michael hopes to strengthen the ecology of thought represented by indigenous languages.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. You have so much that you do, it's hard to know where to start, but could you tell us a little bit about some of the current work you're doing with speech recognition?
So in the past year, I have been working with an organization I co-founded to study automatic speech recognition for the Wakashan languages. And this is the Wakashan AI Consortium. And it was initially funded by MIT Solve with Sloan funding from the Sloan Foundation and also the McGovern Foundation. And so in the past year, what we've been doing is fundamental and foundational machine learning research into building automatic speech recognition or speech-to-text for under-resourced languages, and specifically in the Northwest, the Wakashan languages. And these are the Kwakwala and the Makah languages. They're in Washington State and also in British Columbia.
For the listener that may not be familiar, when you say machine learning to do these kinds of speech recognition tasks, what do you mean by machine learning? Like, what would be the lay explanation?
Machine learning is big. And specifically, what we're working with is the field of using deep neural nets to do phoneme recognition for the language and also doing grammar recognition. And then to maybe explain that a little bit more simply is we're taking indigenous audio and we're training modern neural net models to recognize the sounds of the language and also the grammar and structure of the language, which is currently under-researched within machine learning.
And when we say speech to text, the output there would be to be able to tell your phone what to do, but in your native language. Like, what would your end goal be there? And is it also stuff like being able to have maybe a web browser do assisted reading or that kind of thing too?
So the goal is to put on a headset and speak in either an AR or VR, even your phone, and have a voice user experience as part of a VR experience or game. And that part is solved. I mean, it's still difficult and requires engineering effort. But what's harder is actually the most boring part is the API. So what happens is that you have an application, it could be the website or it could be your phone, similar to Siri, and it sends your audio file, like an MP3 typically, and it would send it to the cloud and it would need to be recognized by the AI model. And the AI model will then convert this waveform data and it will convert it into text data, which is more usable when you're programming. And then when you have the text data, you can do a lot of interesting things. You could create rules based upon the responses, or you can create natural language understanding. Like when you say turn on the light, your waveform goes to the server and gets turned into a text, and that text then goes to a natural language understanding system and says, okay, this means turn on the light. So the hard part is also the unseen part, the recognition of the audio.
And this hasn't been done for indigenous languages previously. Are you like the first?
No, fortunately, there is work within the space. There has been research on larger indigenous languages like the Maori, Diné, or Navajo. There's also research around Inuktitut. The key thing, though, is that what we're focusing on is the specific issue of polysynthetic languages. Polysynthesis, to try to summarize that, is that English is a atomic or isolate language. And so there's these things called morphemes, and a morpheme just means the smallest amount of sound used to convey information. And so, like you say, the red car, you have three morphemes, the red car. In polysynthetic languages, words are constructed of multiple morphemes. And so, like train cars, they can connect together and arbitrarily be long. And so the ramifications here are that these languages have an infinite amount of words. And so there are as many words as there are stars in the sky. The issue is that current modern automatic speech recognition assumes that there's a finite dictionary. And so typically when you're speaking to Siri, there's assumption and there's like a statistical corpus. And as a process of automatic speech recognition, it goes through kind of like a spell check because the phoneme recognizer isn't perfect. And so what happens is it uses a statistical version of the grammar, which is a large text corpus. And it works fine if you have a large text corpus, like every single book ever written that's been scanned and digitized. But it won't work for a language that a word may only be spoken once in the lifetime of the universe because it's highly contextualized and highly dense.
And the languages you're working with right now, is there a large corpus for them? These audio recordings, are there a lot of speakers for these languages?
Unfortunately, no. The languages we're working with are the Wakasan languages in the language family of the Wakasan, and they are considered the most polysynthetic languages in North America and potentially the world. And that's why we work on them. And then simultaneously, they also some of the most researched. Unfortunately, a lot of the text corpus and documentation is still analog, like it's handwritten. There's a lot of early 1900s work, but it's all in handwritten notes by anthropologists. But they do have a large audio data set. It's unannotated, untranscribed, and like most indigenous languages in North America, have virtually no documentation, virtually no text corpus. So the technical problem we're trying to solve is how do we reduce or eliminate the necessity for that large text corpus? And also simultaneously deal with the fact that we also have a very low amount of speakers. For English and French and German automatic speech recognition, you have millions of potential speakers and you have centuries of written word in which to build your text corpus. And we don't have that. Our goal is that if we address that with the Waukesha languages, which from the technical perspective, the hardest languages, we could then scale that to other languages in North America. They're very interesting languages from a scientific perspective, and they're just interesting languages in general. I don't want to impose a value system upon the languages. All the languages are important and sacred. But these languages, the benefit with working with them is that they're highly documented. It's possible to create manual rules based upon the documentation. They're well known in the field of linguistics and computational linguistics. And so our expectation is that we can use that pre-knowledge to accelerate the machine learning process.
So, does the model for a polysynthetic language look different than a language with a finite dictionary?
Yes. Well, English is a strange language, quite frankly, relative. But these languages are just different across the board. They have different sounds in them, completely incompatible phonetically with English and a lot of European languages. And then the structure, the grammar, the morphology is quite a bit different. And so, from the AI perspective, it's a two-phase process. There's the phonetic recognition, the sounds of the language. We'll use a deep neural net model. And for the grammar and structure, we'll be a little more manual. There will be AI involved, the machine learning, but we will be using like manual coded rules. They're called finite state transducers to help recognize the grammar.
And who else is working with you on this? I mean, you're obviously not doing all this work alone. So who's your team? Do you have linguists and computer science people, or is it mostly computer science people?
Thankfully, I'm not alone. So there's the community partners, first and foremost. Nothing can get done without the help and the work with the partners who share this vision for building AI for indigenous languages, the Makah and Kwakwala. In addition to that, our tech team is composed of a linguist. His name is Connor Quinn. He lives in Portland, Maine. And we also have data scientists, my good friend, Sean Sosi. He lives in Seattle. And the boss of bosses, my wife, who's a currently getting her PhD at University of British Columbia.
And by community partners, are you talking about people that are in the tribe? And are there also issues there related to non-exploitive use of the language or who would own the tech?
First and foremost, as part of this research, is to respect Indigenous data sovereignty. I'm an outsider, even though I myself am Indigenous, I'm Native American from Montana. I'm an outsider to these communities, and the goal of the technology isn't to create a data set to exploit, you know, either for personal or academic or commercial use. The data set, the full ownership is going to stay with the community. The goal of this research is to develop methodology and algorithms and tooling to accelerate the documentation and creation of AI for these Indigenous languages. For me and for us, it's really the development of the technology that will scale. Because the community, fundamentally, it's their data. These are their stories. These are stories and data points that are deeply tied to the identity of the people. Like, for instance, these are stories of their creation. These are voices from their elders, their ancestors, like grandmothers and grandparents that are no longer with us. And so I fundamentally, as a business person, feel uncomfortable trying to claim ownership of this data set. Where I would say is that we're borrowing it with their help to build this technology. And they also understand that they have buy-in because they have desire to use this technology in their community. So that's also critical. It's a back and forth relationship. And so we're trying to reciprocate what we're doing with them so that what we're doing has community ramifications for them. It's not technology for technology's sake. It's interesting and cool, and they get to play with toys. But at the end of the day, the community gets a system to help them accomplish a task. Like, for instance, the Kwakwala community we're working with, they want to annotate that huge archive. It turned it into searchable text because it's really hard to search hundreds of hours of audio. They don't know what's in there. Hard. It's a hard task. Search and archive auto. And the macaw community want educational tools. They see the potential where we would use this ASR technology to create learning experiences where students can go on their phone or on the website and practice the language.
I get that the data set would stay under the tribe to preserve data sovereignty, but will your technology itself be patented? And who's going to hold the patent? Or is that not how you're doing things?
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of value though. I think there's like a hidden question in there. It's like, what's the value of the code without the data set? Obviously, the data set has value, but we're not interested in that. But yes, I believe the technology and the methodology would be very valuable. And I think as a way of being sustainable, we would need to, just by necessity, we're in a capitalist system, maximize its value.
We all get bills to pay. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, our data scientist just had a daughter, and we need to help him buy Pampers, and our linguist has a cat, and you know, like, we got to make sure they have kitty litter. There's practical reality. We do need to finance this, and of course, we've been fortunate to have support the foundations and also exploring the possibility of how to maximize the IP of this code and the methodology to make it sustainable. But the goal ultimately is to do the foundational research. Whatever form that takes, it will be broadly accessible is our goal. We're not quite sure. We're still definitely in the first ground floor of working on this. There are 500 plus recognized tribes in North America, and nearly 90% of them are endangered. A depressing amount is very nearly near extinction. Like, the UN has like a measure of how endangered the language is, and most languages in North America are most critical, most endangered level. And most of those languages are polysynthetic and would fall within the domain of this research. Also, my personal language, my family languages are polysynthetic as well. Cheyenne, Northern Cheyenne, and I'm part Blackfeet. They're all part of the Algonquin language family. And that's probably going to be our next target language family, because Algonquin languages span from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast into Boston. It's a large language family. And most of those languages, of course, are endangered or at risk of being endangered.
One of the outcomes of this particular work may also be preservation. Is it possible that you could have this stuff modeled and the machine learning model of that language might be the only place that language exists anymore? Is that what preservation might look like, or would the goal be to get more people speaking it?
There's two embedded questions in there. So I guess one question is this a mechanism for archiving the language long-term? And potentially, that's another goal. I would love to see, not toward the goal of putting it in the museum, but a box, a self-contained language in the box, a little handheld device that's battery powered, and it could become a keepsake that a family could own for generations. And in there, a self-contained AI and programming so that it would teach you basics of the language. And I think that would be an endearing output of this research so that in the future, people could teach your grandchildren using this box. It's self-contained, no dependency upon the cloud. Of course, it's very private, which would be good, but that's not the goal. I could see that being a use case, but I think the main goal is to reinforce present-day educational systems. Like even the most endangered languages where there's only a handful of speakers, they are heroically working to revitalize and reclaim their language. You know, preservation is sticking in the museum and keeping the dust off it, but I think reclamation and revitalization is reintroducing the language into the everyday and making it a living language and reinforcing that. And that's where I see this technology is. You can speak in Northern Cheyenne or macaw to turn on your lights, walk into your room and say, hey, turn on the lights in your language. That makes it ambient and that makes it kind of part of your day to day. And it allows you to participate in the modern AI economy that's coming, the voice activation economy that's coming. So that's the main goal, but I could foresee that being an amazing archival tool as well.
Wow, it's fantastic.
Boy, the time goes fast. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about your work. It's just fascinating and important work.
Thank you very much.
And if you would like more information about Michael's work, you can find him on LinkedIn. Just search for Michael Running Wolf. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.